All right, welcome everybody to our coaching call here for, just trying to look for the date, May 24th, 2018. It's great to be here with you guys. We're going to go ahead and dive right in. And I like to start these calls by just kind of going around the virtual room, if you will. And if you are logged into the call page inside the training portal, there's a chat box there. I'd love for you to just let me know and share wins with me and with the group, wins over the past couple of weeks. And by wins, you know, you define what a win is. Win could be maybe an aha. Maybe you got a little bit of an insight in terms of how you're going to position yourself. Maybe you are making really good progress with your starter list. Maybe you got a positive response from a prospect. It doesn't need to be something massive. It doesn't need to be landing a paying client, although that's certainly a win. Just anything that makes you feel good about the momentum you have or the fact that you're kind of moving forward, you're pushing through it, would love to know. Just type it into the chat box and let me know. Wins since the last time we talked. And while I'm waiting, I wanted to welcome a few folks. We got a few new people joining us, and I know Kathy and Bette and Deborah, at least. There might be a couple others. Not sure they're here, but welcome. It's great. It's great to have you in this group, and it's going to be great working together over the next few weeks to help you get that first paying client and get things moving. Susan says, apologizing in advance, may need to drop off the call for a while if my attorney and a realtor calls. Yeah, hey, definitely. In the middle of dealing with life right now. Hey, hear you. No worries. Hopefully it will be a good call, Susan. All right, so wins. Again, just type it in. Let me know in the chat box what has been good, anything you're happy about in terms of the program, your progress, the material you're going through from the past couple of weeks. Bette says, I may also have to leave at the hour mark. Hey, no worries. These, you know, we find that typically these calls will go an hour, sometimes 90 minutes, depending. So Bette says she's got a five-hour drive to Houston and has to be there at 6:30. That's 5 hours to Houston. That's perfect podcast time right there. I haven't had one of those road trips in a while. I'm looking forward to having a little bit of windshield time so I can catch up on some podcasts. Nanette says, for a win, my name is popping up in LinkedIn searches with greater frequency. However, only one contact that fizzled. Hey, that's good. You know, I'm finding more and more freelancers are getting great prospects through LinkedIn, just out of the blue. That's why it really pays to be specific in your profile and to optimize for the right keywords. We'll talk about that in session 5. And one of the great things about going through this process is you are automatically doing 80 to 90% of the work required to have the right information in LinkedIn. So by going through this, just know that you're going to end up with some great copy that you can repurpose in LinkedIn, and then I give you kind of a quick and dirty training on how to do that right. So once you're done with your website copy, how to take what you have and leverage that in LinkedIn. It definitely makes a big difference just to have the right words there and describe yourself appropriately so that the right prospects find you. Betty says, actually heard you pronounce Betty instead of Bette, like Bette Midler. Oh, sorry about that. You know, it's the same spelling. So I'm sorry. And since we haven't had a conversation yet, I don't know. Believe me, Betty, I get these wrong a lot. And I know what it feels like with a last name like Gandia. I've had to endure a lot of mispronunciations throughout my life. This is my mother's fault. Yeah. All right, Susan P. says, when I reviewed and edited someone's homepage, now he wants me to work on the rest of his website. Unfortunately, I still don't have my own website up. Oh well, listen, that's something. That's a solvable problem, Susan. So let me know how I can help. If you're getting stuck somewhere, let me know if there's anything I can help you with to keep you get you moving again. Ken says, I've begun building my website, installed WordPress, installed theme, and now creating pages. Feeling good. Oh, that's awesome. Hey, that's a big step, Ken. And, you know, I've been really impressed. You've been moving right along through this process. Very consistent. Good for you. That's going to serve you really well. Laura says, finished my website, which feels good because I learned some HTML while dealing with technical issues, ready to reach out to contacts and prospects. Awesome. Yep, that's going to be your next step. So once you got that there, we're going to work through that process. We're going to do some foundational stuff first, and then we're going to start knocking on doors, so to speak, Laura. So that's great. Listen, the website piece, and I mentioned this in the training, it's one of the areas where so many people get stuck. I've tried to minimize the number of obstacles, reduce the friction, but, I mean, there's really not much I could do to make it easier. Of course, you know, we offer to do your website for you, to build it, design it. That's not for everybody, you know, but if you guys find that that's something that, you know what, this is just not for me, I'd rather focus on this stuff and let somebody else do it. You know, that's always an option, guys, and if you're interested in learning more, send me an email, ed@b2blauncher.com, put a website in the subject line, and I'll send you the details of that. But good for you, Laura, for pushing through that, and you too, Ken. That's fantastic. Susan, there's hope for you. As you can see, some of the folks have been able to get it done, and I know you will too. All right, good stuff. Let's go ahead and jump into questions. So a couple of ways you could do that. If you're on the call page in the questions box, you can always submit your question there, or you can dial *2 on your telephone keypad. That will raise your hand. I'll see that here, and I'll unmute you, and we can have a conversation. Anything's fair game here, guys. I'm here to help and support you. I want you to be successful. Don't be shy about asking a question. Even if you think, well, maybe this has been addressed already. I don't care how many times I've addressed it. If you have a question, if you're still not sure about something, if you're struggling with any of the material here or some decisions on positioning or whatever, please, no question is a silly question. You're not wasting my time or anybody else's time. Believe me, if you have the question, somebody else will, and I find that most times what you have it's going to help somebody else. Somebody else is going to have something similar, or they didn't realize they had that question. Let me start with a couple of questions that were pre-submitted. And Betty said, okay, first session, first of many questions. Positioning too narrow or too broad? I have lots of experience, including an MBA, consulting with a variety of businesses, engineering, manufacturing, food service, etc. So could easily position in this very broad area. But I also worked 25 years as an executive in the medical industry in a hospital. So I have lots of experience with making decisions about products, services, and staffing. This is really my passion. Is it too early to narrow to just the target, to just target the medical? Mostly interested in longer copy work, white papers, case studies, executive bios, proposals, etc. Okay. So right now you presented a couple of options. One is consulting with a variety of different businesses, including engineering, consulting, food service. The other one is healthcare, but very specifically inside hospitals as an executive there and with some very relevant experience. On the surface, here's how I look at them. Yes, the first one is a little broader. Second one is much more specific. The question I like to ask at this point, okay, where do I have some connections? So how recent were both of each of these? You know, let's say one of them was 25 years ago, one of them was up until recently. Okay, that's definitely going to or should impact your decision. It's something at least you should factor. The more recent, the better, everything else being equal. Where do I have some contacts? So that's going to be a big one. and then which one, how do they score in terms of their use, generally speaking, of content marketing and copywriting? And they both score high, but healthcare, let's face it, continues to grow tremendously. I mean, it's just what percentage of GDP is healthcare spending in the U.S. alone? It's crazy. So let's just say that everything kind of scores about the same, although the one that will score a little differently is when this experience happened. Based on what you shared with me, I think healthcare is a better option, and I don't think it's too narrow. I think it'd be too narrow if you pick something very specific within healthcare, such as hospitals, for instance. Although, if your experience was significant there and you have a lot of or quite a few people in your network still involved in the hospital system, then it may not be too narrow. So that's a decision we can – that's kind of like the second-level decision. The first decision is, you know, which one – healthcare or consulting, or in the consulting area, by the way, if you have a lot of the consulting was with engineering firms, that's another way you could look at it. So it's not professional service firms and consulting firms. Your target could be some of the firms you serviced as a consultant for engineering firms, manufacturing, et cetera. So really you have several options there potentially. So let me know if that helps, and happy to talk through this with you. Betty, this is the kind of thing that it's easier to have a conversation on. So I know you're here today. If you want to raise your hand and we can chat about it, that might be more helpful. I know you submitted that question a couple of days ago, so maybe you've had some insight since then. All right, Susan asked, when helping a client plan content for a website, how do you personally present your recommendations? Your estimated fee schedule says you deliver a suggested website outline and general content structure. Would you explain that a little bit? Okay. What I like to do is, it depends on the client. So there are clients out there who are very savvy, and when they hire you or want to work with you on a website copy project, they will already know how they want to structure the pages and how they want to structure and organize the content within the site. So they can, their scope is fairly specific. And you're able to essentially just write the copy for each of the sites. And in almost every case, there's going to be changes after that in terms of how they present the pages. And they might realize later, well, we need to split this page into three pages now that we see the copy. But so the really savvy ones are going to do a lot of that work up front. The smaller clients who are not as savvy are going to depend more on you for how to organize the copy, how to organize the message of the website. And that's when you you can add even more value by helping them figure that out. So a couple of ways you could do it, and it depends on how much you know about the stuff, how sophisticated they are, what you want to do. I would just include early on, you know, as when you're new, I would just include that in your scope of work. If they're small, I would just include the fact that you're going to help them figure out how to structure the information on their website. You know, we should have these pages, and here's what each of these pages should say, and so forth. As you become more experienced, that's something you should consider offering as a separate offering. So it would be a kind of a consulting session, and you can sell it as a very specific package, meaning it's, you're not selling it by the hour. You're selling an engagement, a service that includes where the deliverable is, hey, you're going to have a clear sitemap and what the different pages are and the goals of each page and a rough outline of what each page is going to include. And you can sell that as a standalone project. And the beauty of that, and I don't want to get too deep into this because it may be beyond the scope of what you're trying to do now, but the beauty is it helps you and it helps the client. It truly is a win-win, because if you have a client who doesn't know what they want, it's really hard to quote a fixed fee for a project that they haven't defined very well in terms of the scope. But if you help them define the scope by just saying, hey, this you're going to pay me, you know, I'm going to charge you $900, and here's what you're going to get. You're going to get a very clear site map of how this is going to look from a content flow and structure and pages standpoint. Then they end up with something really valuable. Now they can see, okay, great, now it's going to be a lot easier to work with a designer and or a web developer and so forth. And then for you, the win is you have a much clearer scope you can quote on, because then the second project will be quoting the copywriting part, the writing of the web copy for all those pages. Now you know exactly what you have to quote because you've helped them define what that looks like. So, again, that's kind of stage two down the line, Susan, once you become a little more experienced. Right now, especially if it's a smaller client, I would consider just helping them through that as part of your scope of work. And I would, you know, just figure out, just ask questions. What do you want to present? What do you want to communicate? And then you know the conventions, right? You know, depending on what kind of business they're in, if when you look at other competing companies, just get a sense for how are they presenting the information, what kind of pages are they including, and then based on what you're seeing, make a recommendation. Hey, I think we need these 12 pages, and here's how I would organize them, and here's just a rough idea of what each should include, and so forth. And you can add a ton of value by helping them with that because they're not going to know. In fact, most you can tell with some of the smaller companies when you know they've done it all on their own, and maybe their college age kid help with that because it's kind of a mess. All right, so here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to come back. Susan had a couple other questions, but I see a couple of raised hands. So let me. Let me go to the phones, and Susan, I'll get back to you on your other few questions as well. All right. Got a caller here from California, last four digits, 0324. I don't have a name, but you're on.
Hi, Ed. It's Colleen.
Hey. What's up, Colleen?
I'm well. How are you?
Doing well. Good to hear from you.
So I've been sending out these warm emails.
Mm-hmm.
And I also, you sent around that link to the LinkedIn Unlocked book. And prior to sending out the emails, I've been doing a lot of stuff on LinkedIn. So not quite as in-depth as that Melanie woman goes into. But I sort of find that the people that look at emails don't play around much on LinkedIn and vice versa. I don't know. It's interesting. But anyway, I've sent out... to date, I've sent out 100 warm emails, and I've gotten a few responses. I got an interesting one yesterday that I wanted to ask you about. Here's the text. Hi, Colleen. We currently use internal resources. I'm not opposed to working with external content writer, especially if it is produced faster and more cost-effectively. Laura. That's the whole message. So, you know, I sent that option one that you gave us about, you know, it may be that I can produce these items more faster, more cost-effectively. So I thought that was interesting that she was mirroring my language, but I didn't really know how to respond to that. Like,
so, yeah, it's a great question. Here's how I like to think of it, because I have found that if you were in a situation, like in person, if you were in front of that individual, it's somehow easier to figure out how to keep that conversation going, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just because it's online doesn't mean that it's not a conversation. I want you to think of this as a conversation. So let's mm-hmm. assume that you had a magic remote control with a pause button, and you met her somewhere, and you said, hey, well, that's interesting because, you know, I could, depending on what you're doing, I might be able to help you do it faster, cheaper. And then she said, huh, well, we do it internally, but I would be open to looking at ways, and then you were able to hit the pause button so you could think, okay, what am I going to say now? What
exactly.
would you say? So I'm going to turn the tables to you. What would you say to her?
Yeah, see, that's where I'm stumped. I was thinking about, I had a little line on my website that you recommended I take out, and I was thinking it might work here about, you know, the value of a professional writer, like, you know, that's what we do for a living, and, you know, that's why you get good value. I really don't know.
Okay, well, so here's what I want you I don't want you to feel like you have to impress this person, or I don't want you to overthink it. I want you to pretend that you're financially independent, and you're just doing this because you're a little bored, and you just spent the last three months in Mexico in your beach house, and you're back in the States, and you're trying to get this thing going. And so there's, like, no pressure. Honestly, if this happened, great, but if it didn't, it wouldn't either. So let me give you a hint. Would you say something, or would you ask something?
Yeah. Obviously she's, you know, it's begging for an answer, and I just can't think of anything. Like,
all right, so I'll tell you what I would do.
All right, what kind of content are you talking about? Or, you know, because my subject line was your case studies. So
yeah, so I think I would ask a question. I would ask a question because you want to, if you think about it, in a regular human conversation, you would never prescribe or pitch too early.
Yeah.
Right? It's like you go to the doctor is never going to, you say something, it's like, oh, well, here's what you need, and here's a prescription, have a good day. The doctor's going to say, oh, interesting, so when is that happening? When are you feeling that way? And what are the things are you noticing, right? So they're gonna ask follow-up questions. So same thing here. I would probably respond with, hi, Susan, thanks for your reply. Sounds great. What kind of pieces are you typically writing? Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of pieces are you writing frequently, or something like that? You want to give the conversation some momentum.
Yeah.
So what kind of fuel can you pour into this fire to really make it grow? Because the worst thing you could do is, great, let me tell you what the value of using an outside copywriter, that's like pouring water into your small fire.
Yeah. Okay.
Right, so how can
cool.
we fan the flames? And keep it going. It takes a little bit of practice. What helps me, and listen, this is not an easy thing. This is a skill, right? So it takes practice. What really helps me is doing what I just shared with you, and it might be something you have to do kind of like outside of this call, but it's pretend that I came across this person at Starbucks. And what would that conversation look like?
Yeah, okay.
And I know that's like really far-fetched, Starbucks at the grocery store, but seriously, if we were in person, meeting in person, having that conversation in real time, what would that look like? And that usually gives me the clarity, because I would ask a question in return. And then that question it begs to be answered, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You've approached it like a human. So, yeah, and then just see where – and so here's where you want to go. Now, so that's the first part. The second part, Colleen, is you want to try to figure out, okay, what do I ultimately want to accomplish here? And that will help you figure out the question many times that you should ask. So if your ultimate goal is to have to get a chance at one project. Okay, so I want you to reverse engineer it. That's kind of the end. Begin with the end in mind, right? So that's the end. Mm-hmm. What would be the step before that? The step before that would be pitching it as maybe a pilot. Hey, let's just try one thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so what do we need to do to get to that opportunity? Well, figuring out what they're doing right now. See if we can help or find and identify something that they do a lot of that would be low risk and easy for her to give me a shot at. Okay, so that's, now I'm three steps removed. All right, so then what should my question be? And that's why I would ask, great,
yeah.
Thanks for your reply. So what are you doing a lot of? What are you writing a lot of these days?
Yeah, that's good. That sounds conversational. Yeah, I get what you're talking about. That's good. It was just a different reply. Like, I've gotten a couple that were, we might use an outside writer depending on how much it costs, you know. And so I sort of have a reply for that one. And I actually talked to a guy on Wednesday, and he said, well, we publish articles once a week, and this sort of might be based on, say, a subject matter expert's interview, and then you write it up. And so we chatted about it. It turned out they only were like a page each. So, you know, so I quoted him 100 to 150 each, you know, just to get started. And, you know, that if he wanted, say, 4 a month, we could, you know, might get better value out of that. So,
okay.
He said,
and where is that? Is he thinking about that?
Yeah. So I said, he said, well, they haven't used outside writers before, but he'd pitch it to his team, or I can't remember the exact word he used. And I said, well, can I send you a quote or a fee estimate and for you to work with? And so he said that would be great. So I told him I'd have that for him by Friday. And then I asked him, you know, in your script, you say ask him when to follow up. And I asked him when to follow up, and he said 3 weeks' time. So,
okay.
So now I'm working on the fee estimate, and I've downloaded your, you know, the simple fee. Well, I downloaded both of them, but you said to start with the simple one.
Yeah.
Can I put it in both options in one estimate? You can either just take one off at $150 or four for $500 or something like that. Should I pick
Yeah,
both
I like giving options. Absolutely. Give them the option.
Okay.
What you'll find, in fact, that's more of an advanced strategy, but many times I like three options. When it makes sense. I'm not saying make something up for the third one, but when I find that when you give a prospect three options, many times they'll pick the middle one, sometimes even the higher one. And the cool thing about the middle one is typically what you would have quoted when you offered one option would have been the low one. So by offering three, there's a lot of psychology going on there, but you many times increase your fees and the income from the opportunity. So, yeah, give them the options, because here's the other thing that happens psychologically when you present two options like that. What you're communicating is not, do you want to do this? It's what you're communicating is, which one of these do you want?
All right, yeah, cool.
You know, so that's awesome. And listen, this is all a start. I think you understand this, right? We're just trying to get something going. To me, it's really not about the money right now. It's really about can I get somebody to pay me to write something for them? Because emotionally, the win that comes from that for you is worth a heck of a lot more than whatever they're going to pay you.
You know?
So that's what you want. You want to get started somewhere. And then the other thing I would say, Colleen, is, you know, for those people who respond with, well, you know, we usually do stuff internally, or we have somebody we work with already. I actually just wrote an article about this, and I'm publishing next week. Instead of looking at it as a negative thing, I really want you guys to think about this as a positive thing. And you know why? Number one, they actually write stuff that somebody's got to write. Sure, it's not you right now, but they actually write it, so they have a demand. And number two, that person or people who do it currently will not be around forever. You know, they might they might quit. They might, if it's a freelancer, she might get really busy with other clients. She might end up joining the circus this summer. You know, who knows? So the way I present it is great. I would love to be your backup. you know, can you please keep my information handy and mind if I check in with you maybe a couple of times a year? They always say yes. So position yourself as their backup, and if you get enough of those, believe me, somebody will contact you, because part of their job is to make sure that this stuff can get done and done right and on time. And if their go-to person suddenly out, you want to be the person they think of.
Interestingly, you know, with LinkedIn, your method of and of course, I did have to join premium, like, after starting, your method of finding contacts, like, half a day later. It was like, I reached the commercial limit.
The commercial limit, yeah. It's quick now.
So I'm paying the $60 a month, but you can just keep going. You don't, you never have to stop. So anyway, I was doing that thing where you go to the company pay. I've done it. I always did it, but I didn't know how to use those filters. I filtered for marketing, and I looked at the woman's profile, one of the marketing managers, and then I found her email address, and I put her on my list to send out, you know, send them out 10 at a time, the batches of emails. And before I'd sent out, so I'd collected that email on, like, Friday, and I was going to send it out the next Tuesday, and she actually contacted me through LinkedIn.
Because she saw that you had looked at her profile?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I thought that's the other power of LinkedIn, that that's the first time. And she actually contacted me and said they need a writer and, you know, could we talk? And we were supposed to talk last week, but she got busy and now she hasn't gotten back to me. But anyway, I thought that was an interesting thing with LinkedIn that –
Yes.
And I've done that, too, where I had a cute little thing happen where I looked at a guy's profile. He looked at my profile. So I emailed him back saying, hey, I saw you looked at my profile, possibly because I looked at your profile. Can we connect? And he connected with me. So that was sort of funny.
LinkedIn is
a funny animal because some people don't have any profile at all. They're on LinkedIn, but they have no profile. So it's like they're not playing the LinkedIn game, you know. So it's, I think email still has its place, as you always tell us.
Yeah, I think you need both. And I don't talk about the whole, hey, you know, people will see that you looked at their profile, because I found that when I've talked about it before, everyone kind of clings to that idea, and they, you know, we all take the easy route, right? So the moment you talk about that, that's the moment people stop doing what they should be doing, and instead they start looking at a bunch of profiles, hoping that somebody will contact them. That's kind of gravy when it happens, but I wouldn't count on it. But if you can imagine,
I was going to send her an email. Yeah.
And I'm not saying you are, but this is really for the group in general, guys. Know that that's something that could happen. And this is yet what the 37th reason why it's important to have strong positioning. Can you imagine, Colleen, right? It's your LinkedIn headline says, writer and copywriter for the water and wastewater industry, something like that. And then you look to somebody's profile who's in marketing at a company that makes, you know, these cool valves. It's like it couldn't be more relevant, right? So it's not unusual for that person to say, oh, that's cool. Let me actually reach out to her or connect with her, because that's somebody relevant, as opposed to the other 99% of people who've reached out to her to connect, maybe not 99, but 80 to 90% who are not really relevant.
Yeah,
so that's awesome.
Yeah, so it's sort of starting to pop, but I've sent out – So I was just one final thing. I don't want to occupy your whole time. So I have a CRM that tracks the emails that I send out. And out of 100 that I sent, 24 have been opened. And I don't have the exact numbers, but I've only actually started conversations with like 4 of them. And maybe 10 have actually, you know, a couple of them answered, oh, we use internal resources, blah, blah, blah. But Are those good
Okay.
numbers? Is that, am I doing something wrong? Why 76 people have not opened them? I don't, yeah.
You're not doing something wrong. I don't, nothing you said worries me. I think those are, those numbers are fine. I'm curious, what are you using, by the way, for, is it HubSpot?
Yeah.
Okay. So two things with open rates, you never get a true open rate because of the way email works and HTML and images and emails, and a lot of people have that turned off. So it's actually going to be a bigger open rate than what you're seeing.
Oh, okay.
I can tell you, you know, if it's 25, it's probably, I'm guessing, 35, 40% at least. Number one. Number two, if you're doing at least, if you're doing around 5% or better in terms of some kind of positive response, to me a positive response is anything outside of a no. So somebody who says, maybe, I don't know, we usually do that stuff internally, to me that's a positive response because there is something there. It just may not be right now.
Yeah.
So if you're doing 5% or better, you're doing well.
Okay.
And number two, or number three, I should say, that don't feel, and this goes out to everybody, guys, don't feel that this is going to be the rest of your life. Like, those first 100 emails are going to be like, oh, my gosh, is this going to be what I'm going to be doing for the rest of my life? I don't know if I really want to be a freelancer. it won't. This is actually the hardest phase. Getting until you get to about $25,000 a year in income from this, this is really the hardest phase. So this is like basic training, you know. This is the hardest thing for a Marine to do in Paris Island. After that, I'm not saying it's easy, but it's not going to be. If it was basic training for the rest of their military career, they just wouldn't last. You know, I mean, it's bad enough that so many people already drop off. So, yeah, just know it's going to get better. It's going to get better because you're going to get more experience. You're going to get better in your efforts. You're going to have more confidence. All these things are going to work together to give you exponentially better results. So you're doing the right thing. I mean, you're getting activity. You're doing exactly what you're supposed to be doing.
Okay, good. Well, it's great to be able to talk to you. I appreciate you opening up your phone to us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Keep me posted. I mean, I suspect that it won't be long before you tell me Ed got one.
hope so.
Yeah. Good stuff, Colleen. Thank you. Great talking to you.
Okay, thanks.
All right. Let's see. We got Betty. Betty on the line. Hey, Betty. How you doing?
Hello there. I'm doing
Hello.
Well.
Welcome. Sorry
Hello.
For the name mishap.
Not a problem. I've been dealing with it for my entire life.
Okay.
And I usually tell people I answer to any of it just because I like to answer, but that doesn't matter. But I also know that people appreciate it when you say, hey, this is how it's pronounced, so then they know. I've been sitting here trying to, or not sitting here, but I've been trying for a year to narrow down, and I've decided what I am in is a decision loop, and based on many things, I think that's my procrastination excuse, because until I make a decision, I'm not moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
The deal is, if I can clarify it, I actually am pretty equally divided, whether it's on business side or whether it's on medical side. But the medical side is the side that I would love to fall on. My dilemma is, from the business side, the clients that I have worked most with are small businesses, which means they have usually a very singular or simplified product. They don't have a lot of money. Many times they don't use writers. So while I have contacts there and I have experience there and I could speak to just about any industry there, the potential would be quicker, but in the long term, not nearly as productive. However, the loop starts with medical. Where I am in the medical field is in the building and operationalizing of large medical facilities, healthcare facilities. So in other words, I've been on the side that said to Texas Instruments, to Siemens, to Helen Ziegler, to Baxter, to Johnson & Johnson, we will use your product, we will buy your service, or we won't. And most often that was dependent on the copy, whether it was a proposal that was not written correctly or whether it was not enough case studies to say that they were applicable where we were building. Maybe in the Middle East, they were unwilling or unable to identify their product in a way that appealed to, you know, the religious or the social culture. So, you know, I would love to write for those big companies and say, I could help you apply to your market because I was your market. Mm-hmm. But they're big, and they've got huge, huge departments that do that. And I'm thinking, how would I ever, this baby writer, get into that closed little community? So I keep going back and forth. Long-term potential, much bigger profit, much bigger companies, and they're really not the same. They're really very different. Am I making any sense?
Yeah, absolutely. It makes perfect sense. So here's the thing. Your dilemma is very common.
I knew that. Somebody needs to kick me out of the loop.
Here's what I would say. You could think this thing to death.
Yes.
And as you know, it's a complex – I mean, because if you were to map this out, every decision point and every iteration – multiplies exponentially. So there comes a point very quickly after, like, you know, well, what if this happens, and then how would this play out? And after, like, step three, you got about 96,000 different possibilities. So it's impossible to really know. I think you are at a point right now where you just need to make a decision and go with it, the best decision possible on paper, and then start taking action. The market will tell you what to do as you get going. So, in other words, the answers will come as you get out there. And you just have to trust that that will happen. You have an amazing background. You have that going for you. This angle of I can write your stuff because I was your customer is extremely powerful when you can back it up, and you certainly can. So, to me, now that you've shared this with me, I'll just tell you, I think this is the way you should go, the hospital side. No question about it. Because if the reason for doing the other is that you think it will be easier to land some clients, I think you're making that based on some false assumptions. And I mean, you already understand that, right? It's going to be a tough go. And then long term, you're going to be unhappy because it's going to be an uphill battle. Go where there's going to be where the long-term potential is bigger, and don't shortchange yourself in the short run because it won't be any easier in the short run.
Okay, so based on that, I'm going to ask one more simple question.
Yeah.
Most of my contacts, the people I've worked with are the same as me. They're the consultants that have, you know, worked with. They're not executives or marketing managers in these companies. So do I just basically not cold call, but cold market to the department heads, to the CEOs, to the, you know, directly to, even though it's a large company, do I just go to the names of the people there that I at least know in the company?
Yes, all of the above. Where are you right now? What session? You're in session one, correct?
I'm in session one. But
okay,
I've been going around this, like, you know, I've worked with, I attended a couple of Joshua Boswell seminars, and I've been going around this barn for over a year trying to decide which door to get in, and I finally said, no, Ed Scott, he talks my language. he sounds like the kind of methodology that I can work with, and I'm just going to do it. And yours is the way I decided to go. So, yeah, I'm in session one. But, like, I've already answered a lot of the questions, if you know what I mean. And you just helped me focus that down to the right answer.
Absolutely. So the reason I'm asking about session one is only because I wanted to make sure the where to go and who to contact and how, that's coming. Don't worry.
Okay.
One step at a time. Let's figure this out first. And then once you nail it, then we can worry about that other stuff.
Okay, so I'll work through
it. That will come.
I'm not a patient person, as you can tell.
No, that's fine. You're eager to get going, and I love your enthusiasm. I would say just make that decision now. And just to maybe ease your mind a little bit, let me give you a clue. Siemens is not going to be your first client, okay?
Right.
For every Siemens, Johnson & Johnson, and Baxter, there are about 20 other mid-sized companies that most of us have never heard of. You may have heard some of them already because you've been on the other side.
You're correct, because you know.
Yeah, so you know, right? You know that
out there. You know, my last contract was a $12 billion medical facility in Doha that I was working on for Her Highness Sheikh Hamosa. And so the big companies are the ones I've worked with. I've not done much. And I guess you just gave me a clue. I need to get my head around who else provides those same products and services.
Yeah. And so the mid-market, that's a sweet spot. They're big enough where they have a marketing department, but not so big that it's scary at this stage of the game for you. And it's just hard to navigate. When I started out enterprise software, I mean, I was really scared because who was I thinking? Just like you, I was thinking Microsoft, Oracle, JDE, and all these other companies. Like, oh my gosh, I just can't see myself, little me. Why would – you know what? For every one of those, there are about 50 companies that are much smaller but big enough. They have budgets. They're working with writers. They need help, and nobody's ever heard of them.
Great.
Exactly. I remember one of my first clients said, we're like, you probably, I don't know if you remember this commercial from the, I think it was from the 80s, BASF, BASF.
Of course.
Yeah, like they said, we make the things that make the things you buy work, something like that.
Right.
And they're the no name. And one of my first software clients was like, yeah, nobody knows who we are because we're kind of like in this little corner of the market. But guess what? Guess who uses our software? And he started naming household names. I said, oh, yeah, I know that, because some of them were pharmaceutical, some of them were food and beverage, some of them were there's several different verticals he went after. So, yeah, that's where your opportunity is going to be. And then eventually, guess what? Eventually, you're getting an opportunity with Baxter and then or Johnson & Johnson and so forth. But baby steps.
Great. Guidance there. You get stuck in these thought loops and you don't go outside the box, I guess, and think other methods to get there. Thank you. I'll let somebody else have time. And
great.
We'll be back in touch. Thank you.
Yeah. Keep me posted. Keep me posted. It's exciting.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Betty. All right. So, again, guys, star two, if you have a question, you want to have a discussion, just like with Betty. Hey, you need to talk through something. You're kind of caught in the loop. You're stuck. You need to brainstorm some ideas. Doesn't really matter where you are in the process. Star two will raise your hand. And while I'm waiting, let me go to Susan. Had a couple other questions here she had submitted. Let me refresh this. Okay, let me see if I think it was this one. Okay, she asked, when editing a client's web content, do you do your editing directly on their website, or do you copy and paste to a new document do your editing there, then submit that to the client. Yes, absolutely. I work in Word, Microsoft Word. So I copy and paste it. If we're refreshing their content or editing, it's much easier to do it that way. It's up to you and the client whether or not you're going to do a separate document for each of the pages, or if you're going to have one document with all their web copy. If it's a small website, I find that it's easier to work out of one Word document. But if it's going to be 10 or more pages, it's easier typically to just kind of spread them out and have one document for each page. But, it's up to you and the client. But definitely it's a lot easier to work that way than directly in WordPress, for instance, to do editing. Susan says, also, I'm doing work for someone who has created a login so I can go directly into the construction zone of his website, but I'm nervous about making changes that he might not like. Yeah, so even more reason to do it in a Word diet. So a lot easier. And then when you go back and forth, you can use track changes, which is another great reason to use Word. And that way the client can make those edits with track changes directly on the Word document. Susan also asks, how important is it to get a physical mailing address from a client? I'm assuming invoicing is all done by email. I like the idea of sending handwritten notes, et cetera, but is there any reason for needing it? I always like to get it because even though I send my invoices over email, I still like to have a client's contact information for several reasons. One is I put it on the invoice itself. Number two is I want to update my contact management system and just so I have it, and then also to send handwritten notes, maybe a small gift during the holidays, that kind of thing. So definitely get their address, and the best time to do that is when you first engage with them. When they first hire you, you just ask. That's the easiest and most appropriate time typically. But if you can do it later, it doesn't really matter. Susan also asked, does the fee agreement take the place of an invoice, or do you do both? You definitely want to do both. So a fee agreement, for those of you who are already at that point, is my version of a quote. Think of it as a quote that's got you not just the scope of work and your fee, but also has your terms and conditions. If you're not there yet, don't worry about it. We're gonna talk about it at that point. But when you're ready. But that's what it is. When the client accepts it, they sign it, send it back to you, and then you do the work. If it's a first-time client, you want to go ahead and then create an invoice for the deposit. So that's a separate document that you want to send out. And, of course, once you submit your initial draft, however you want to do this, usually a week after I submit my initial draft, I go ahead and invoice for the balance. And that's a separate document as well. Laura asks, website security. What do you recommend regarding website security for WordPress sites? Even though it's not an e-commerce site, I don't want visitors alarmed by the not secure warning. Thanks. Yeah, you know what? Let me Laura, I'm going to copy and paste your question in the forum, and I'm going to tag Crystal so she could give you some tips because she's really up on that, and she can give you some really good advice. She's great with that. So let me make sure to mark that. Okay. And Deb asked, and this is a question she wanted to ask Colleen, if Colleen is still on the call. She says, I'm curious how long it took Colleen to research and draft the 100 emails she mentioned sending out, because I'm finding it takes me a lot of time for each one. Looking for tips here. Okay. Before Colleen, if you want to let us know, a couple of quick things. Deb, I posted a short video in the Facebook forum earlier this week explaining how to take the time and stress out of the swarm email prospecting process. So I strongly recommend you check that out. I think it's going to help clarify how to turn this into more of a non-event. And so you spend less time drafting these emails. I find that that's really where most people get stuck, and they go way too deep into the research and crafting the right message. And you'll see that if you stick to one of these two templates and the approach I'm teaching you here, you're going to be able to simplify it dramatically. The second thing is I never recommend you do, you know, 100 warm emails. You need to batch these, batch process them, either in groups of 5 to 10, or, frankly, I prefer to do them one at a time, ad hoc. And here's why. I find a prospect, and I'm looking at their website, and I realize, wow, this would be a great prospect for me. I should send them a warm email. There's something you saw on their website that you'll be able to use in your email. Hey, you noticed this about them. Let's just say, you know, they have this really cool series of white papers, or that they've been publishing a lot of case studies, or they have a ton of case studies on their site. Something about their content marketing. Now you start researching on LinkedIn to see who the marketing director might be, and you're looking for the contact information. You find that, you get their email through another tool, and then you're starting to draft the email. Wouldn't it be a lot easier to draft the email when it was just 15 minutes ago that you saw whatever on their website that you wanted to mention as your meaningful connection, right? Wouldn't that be easier as opposed to, let's say, building a little list in Excel of 10, 20, 30, 100 companies, and then having to go back to each one to figure out, well, wait a minute, what is it that I noticed about them? What is it that I wanted to point out? That's a lot harder. It looks good on paper, but it just doesn't work. So I like to batch process them in very small groups and even individually, and in which case it makes the question of how long it took me a little bit harder to answer. So I'll let Colleen talk about that. But Colleen, if you're still around, and yeah, she is. I'm going to go ahead and unmute you, Colleen, if you don't mind. Do you have a sense for how long it's taken you?
What I do, I found a list of 100 environmental companies, the top 100 enviro companies for 2017, and I've just been going through that list, and I find their website. I go to, and then I click their LinkedIn connection, and so while I'm at the website, I look at what sort of content they put out, and I just have an Excel sheet where I have a column where I put the warm touch, whether it's case studies or white papers or whatever it is that they put out. And then I put in, I find the name of the marketing person that I want to contact and find their email through your method on Google. And then I put 10 per batch in a spreadsheet in an Excel, and I do a mail merge with your template, you know, that option one template.
Okay.
And, of course, then I have to go through. I check them each carefully, but then I just copy and paste it into the Outlook and send the emails.
Awesome. So you got a process down. That's really cool.
Yeah.
I like that.
No, it doesn't always work. You can't always find the email address. And some of these companies, out of the 200 top companies, like some of them are really small, like less than 25 employees, and you know I'm not even going to try with those people. So it takes a while, but I've been managing to put out 30 a week. So that's sort of been my goal. Although I'm running out now, I don't know where to go now. It'll take me a bit longer, I think. But yeah, it helps if you start with a good, you know, some sort of go to industry publications that do these sorts of things and see if you can find a list of companies in your market. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's a great starter list, right, because it gives you some momentum right out of the gate.
Yeah.
One thing that I find.
A list. Yeah, that didn't work.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. One thing I find is after that, you'll find another one. But the most important thing is getting into the habit. And one of the best things you could do is just carve out time every week. I like to do this Friday afternoons to read through a couple of industry publications. And I say carve out the time because if you don't, it just doesn't get done. At least I don't.
Hmm.
And when you flip through it, of course, it used to be, you know, the printed version. Now all of these are online. You inevitably come across some names you hadn't heard before. And you know, companies that are getting written up or doing some really cool things. And that's where I find the ongoing prospecting, a lot of it comes from those ad hoc opportunities you've uncovered through your weekly reading.
Just as a little update, I just got an email from that woman who said we might, we currently use internal resources. She says, she just emailed me today saying, I gave this some thought, and, you know, what are your prices of turnaround time? So I'm now sending her back the one about let's have a conversation. So that's
perfect.
Pretty exciting. Oh, yeah.
Now, is that response based? Did you, after you and I talked, did you send her, so you just did it on her own?
Yeah, I was just drafting it here while listening to you, and then I got this response from her, so I had to change what I was drafting, but yeah, cool. I have to
Man,
have
I love it. We're,
fun.
We're getting like live play-by-play here. Very cool. So now it's what would I do in a real-life situation? Well, it depends. My fees are very reasonable. It depends on the project. I charge a fixed fee, so that way there are no surprises based on the scope of the project. Can we set up a quick, you know, 15-minute conversation so I get a better idea of what you might be looking for and I can give you something? That's such a natural thing to say that doesn't sound like you're selling, I don't know, snake oil.
Yeah. Exactly. So there you go. It's all
awesome.
Happening, Ed. All happening.
Keep us posted.
Okay.
Fingers crossed. All right. So, Deb, I hope that answers your question. I just tagged you, by the way, in the forum with the video, so you'll see it. And by the way, listen, Deb, don't feel bad. Like, what you're mentioning here is one of the most common things I see with email prospecting is the – and I'm the king of that because I spent a long time when I was in IT sales. I worked with this guy, and he was the master of – researching prospects and presenting yourself differently and showing that you've done your homework. And the level of research this guy did was just remarkable. Now, he was fairly efficient, but we're still talking hours per prospect. Totally different business and all that, but I came from that world, and I find it hard to simplify things. I just felt like I was cheating, you know, like, oh, wait a minute, I'm taking the easy way out. I have somebody in another coaching group right now who's actually, and she is sending so many of these warm emails every week that she's been doing some careful tracking of her metrics. And she started experimenting with whether or not the specificity in her warm emails would make a difference. In other words, whether or not including more detail about what she uncovered or noticed about the prospect increased her response rate as opposed to kind of just a general good enough in terms of, hey, yeah, this is a one-to-one email, but I'm just going to give you enough for you to feel that way, but not so much are you going to think that I went above and beyond. And here's what overwhelmingly she found, is that more detail was not improving response. In fact, if anything, she was getting a better response from the, excuse my language, but the kind of the half-assed approach. Again, it's not that it was bad. It was very generic. Hey, I love your blog, and especially love the recent post on X. I'm reaching out because I actually work with companies like yours. So it was that, which to many of us might seem like, well, gosh, that's not that hard. Could you really get away with that? And she is. She's getting actually better response. And it's been weeks, by the way. Actually, it's been a couple of months. She's getting a better response with that than with the other. So I'm not suggesting, hey, definitely try that, but you may want to experiment. If you find that, man, I'm spending just so much time, scale it back, keep it simpler, stick to a couple of different templatized approaches, and test it and see what you get. Good stuff, guys. Good stuff. All right, so let's see. We got a caller out in California, last four digits, 4235. You're on. Hello.
Hi. Hi, Ed. It's Nanette.
Hey. Who's this?
Nanette.
Oh, hey, Nanette. How are you?
I'm good. Kind of new
to
the
to
whole
you.
Thing with you.
Yes. Welcome. It's great to have you in the group.
Thank you. I've just been hoping to narrow things down. I've been working on trying to make money this way for a while. I tried a different, this is my second website, and kind of did a big redo. And I guess struggling to focus, which I appreciate a lot hearing about Betty and her experience. I kind of think I might be coming from the same type of angle, but not really. I don't have her consulting work. But I'm trying to go from academia. You know, I teach people about business strategy. I critique their writing. I tell them, you know, how to focus and how to get the reader's attention. And I teach about it, but I don't really apply it out in the world. So I've been trying to figure out how to get away from teaching graduate students and making, because there's really not much money in academia, and trying to instead have up my own writing business.
Gotcha. Yeah. Where has that led you so far with the in session one? Like, what have you uncovered? What are some possibilities?
Well, you know, I've uncovered things. My education and some of my experiences in aviation, and so I had thought. And my website is sort of my LinkedIn page is focused on, you know, working for. Writing for aviation companies, you know, maybe like Boeing. Boeing would be a big one, but some of the smaller ones. I've just struggled thinking. I know they're putting out writing things that are written, but I don't know if they don't appreciate the writing or if maybe I've narrowed down too much to look at aviation. And since I've been working in academia and not in aviation so much, that perhaps I should take again that broader look and I teach MBA students all the time.
Why aviation? Tell me about your experience or knowledge of that field.
I am a private pilot, instrument rated. I am also an advanced ground instructor in aviation. So on the private side, individual side, I have that aviation background. I did research, and when I was a graduate student, I did research in aviation, like the NASA programs and I went out and talked to people from the NASA programs about their effectiveness. So I thought that that would be a nice connection. But, like, the people I interviewed related to aviation all were really small businesses that probably wouldn't have much of a marketing, or they were government groups, which also have a different level of issues as far as hiring writers. So.
Gotcha. So if we kind of compare them side by side, let's just take higher education. Is that one you're considering, by the way, higher education?
I've been teaching in a higher – but then I think, well, maybe as opposed to teaching, I should just write for higher education.
Yeah, because that's what I was thinking when you mentioned that one, is maybe you were considering higher ed as a target market potentially, right? So there's the higher ed, meaning other colleges and universities.
Mm-hmm.
Within what you're doing now, another one would be business in general. So you're teaching MBA students. Is there anything in particular there, though? Because you couldn't just say, "Well, I, you know, work with businesses." Why? Because I teach MBA students. Like that's not
right.
A very strong.
I teach strategy. I usually teach their last class, like strategic management.
Okay.
It was one of the primaries in organizational behavior, but.
Okay. So, you know, with I think the organizational behavior might have some legs, but, you know, because this is all academic, it's going to be a little bit harder to translate that into what you're trying to do now in terms of your positioning. So then the other one would be aviation. It's not just a passing interest. I mean, you have credentials there. Here's what I do know. I know very little about aviation. What I do know is that there are a lot of companies, and they do a considerable amount of writing. I mean, not massive, but it's definitely there. Seems like a lot of them work with marketing firms and agencies.
Mm-hmm.
So one thought would be to go after And we're going to talk more about this in a future session. So, you know, in terms of how to do this, and get your start with marketing firms and agencies that have aviation clients. I know of one example that you can check out if you want to maybe get a little bit of inspiration, I think going through this website might give you some ideas and maybe give you some clarity as to whether or not this would be a target market you want to pursue. Gorman360.com, Gorman360, the number numerical 360.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Check it out. So what he does, he actually started out as a freelance designer, and I believe he was working for an agency at one point, and then he realized, you know, I could do this on my own, but assemble a virtual team of creative professionals, and that way my clients don't have to pay the overhead of a big agency. So I could offer to do a lot of the same stuff, but I'm basically managing the virtual team. They're all contractors. And he's done really well in strictly aviation, and he's got a cool story to tell. And then you'll see how you can take your personal experience in aviation and translate it into a really cool, strong message, positioning and message.
Okay. Because I feel like,
but, you know,
seems weird to people. I don't know.
Well, here's the challenge there, though. The challenge with aviation is you got the credentials. We know that, yes, they do marketing, but the one that's really missing is your network. You don't really have a lot in terms of a network you can tap, which means you would have to start cold, and can definitely happen, but it's just it's a tougher road. You know, you have to be a little bit more resilient.
Yeah, it's a little weird. I mean, I also teach aviation legislation for an aeronautical university, so probably my students have gone out, but I don't know. Is that a weird way to contact former students to look for work?
No, because if you think about it as charity, it will be tough. But if you think about it as, you know, I can help people who are struggling. I find that many of us who write undervalue the work. And you have to step outside of your shoes and realize that most people, and guys, this is just good advice for all of us here in this room. Most people think of what we do, if we do it well, as magic, because they cannot do it well. If you've ever seen a master at work, and even something really simple, like, I don't know, fixing something, like a mechanic, auto mechanic, and they just, oh, yeah, and then they disconnect a few things, like, oh, my gosh, really? You fix it? Yeah. It's beautiful. And of course, to them, it's nothing, but to us, it's fantastic. So I want you to think about it that way. The fact that you can do this is you're helping others who find it really difficult. So I wouldn't think of it as, oh, I'm begging for work and, you know, it's shameful, nothing like that. Otherwise, it's you're not going to be successful with it, you know.
Good point. And I try to remind myself when I grade people's papers, gosh, they're executives. They are not writers.
Right.
It definitely comes through sometimes.
And you know what they feel like when they're working with a ghostwriter, those people, when they decide to write a book and they hire somebody, it's like, how do you do that? That's what they're thinking, because they know. Some of them don't know. Some of them have this ego that's so large that they don't realize that they're horrible. But for some of them, it's like it's a blessing. I got several ghostwriter friends, and it's like, oh, they think, you know, I'm a god. So I think you got some good things to work with here.
Okay.
But it's going to give there's pros and cons to all of these, actually. Higher ed, you know, that's not one we talked about, but maybe want to explore that one. I mean, you're an insider. So, you know, how can you craft a message, or could you craft a message that explains, look, I work with colleges and universities to write marketing educational materials, you know, as an insider, as somebody who's been, you know, in the not the business, but an educator,
mm-hmm.
you know, for X number of years. I understand. I have that perspective.
Yeah, yes, it's hard because when I changed my LinkedIn to, because my LinkedIn was more just professional related to being a professor, and then I changed it to aviation, and I'm like, maybe I shouldn't be doing this. Maybe I should be going into, you know, folks staying with higher education because it's a weird break. It might seem odd
yeah.
when my students go check me out and they go, who is this person? Why is she teaching my class?
By the way, Laura just typed in the chat. She's had a suggestion. Have you thought about combining what you've taught in business and applying this to aviation companies? You know, there might be something there.
Yeah. That's a good point.
I mean,
I could see it. That's why I thought aviation, because they could really, a lot of them could really use quite a bit of help. But then getting them to see that is, have to
well,
find the right people.
I would find out, I would do a little bit of research and don't need to do a deep dive, but try to get a lay of the land in terms of maybe the categories inside aviation and which categories seem to be the ones doing a significant amount of marketing and ask yourself, is this enough or is this such a small field because it's only one sector out of five? That you know, this would be very difficult. And
okay.
You just need to take a deeper look, and then decide, and then look at the next one. So all right, well, let's look at Plan B, and it might be this one. Plan C might be: is there anything in terms of what you've taught, you know, with strategy? What was the other one? It was a leadership or organizational behavior?
Organizational behavior.
Okay. You know, there might be – what about ghostwriting for executives? I mean, you've worked with executives, right? You're working executive
mm-hmm.
MBA programs?
I did. After just grading their papers, I thought, man, you should hire me because I can't believe – wonder what you turn out. At work, but anyhow.
Yeah, what about executives? You know how many executives want to have or are trying to have a blog and write articles for industry publications to, you know, authority building thought leadership articles?
Hmm.
What have you presented yourself that way? So here's the thing you got to understand with executives and business people. If you're an academic, and especially if you are an academic in their field, and you work with them, the perception is so high, like for most of them. Like they, right? It's kind of like I'm the English teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Like automatically, I put you up there because when it comes to writing, I mean, if you're an English teacher, you're credentialed.
So now
there's
I have three
a huge
areas?
Market for that. What's that?
So now do I have three areas to think about?
Yeah, you do. I think that's one with legs right there, definitely.
Yeah.
It's the I work with executives to help them write authority building thought leadership pieces that engage their audience. I mean, those aren't necessarily that's not the copy, but you help them get what they have in their heads, out of their heads, on the paper in an engaging way. And there are a couple of layers there. There's the, you know, that kind of everyday, weekly, monthly kind of writing. And then there's the book. That's, you know, the big animal. Not all of them want to do the book. Many of them do, though. And you're very credentialed.
Yeah, I am.
In fact, as I start thinking about that, that one to me would be the first one I would investigate, followed by aviation and followed by higher ed.
Okay. Interesting. I was just, okay. That's like some good advice. I'm really going to think about how I can make that work.
Yeah, give it some thought. Don't rush through this. You know, as I mentioned in session one, this is one where if you're going to take some time, take it here.
Okay.
Not because you're trying to make the perfect decision, just because you really want to let this marinate a little bit.
Well, that's an angle I hadn't thought about, but it certainly would leverage my degrees as well. So,
yes.
Which would be nice. It would be nice to think that I'm paying for my education.
Yeah.
Okay.
Are you good?
Thank you. So, yes, I could even work for the aerospace, as Laura mentioned, you know, and executives of Boeing. I could make a straighter thing.
Absolutely. But then again, you know, as I was talking with Betty, your first clients are not going to include Boeing. I'm not discouraging
right,
I'm just saying, like, yeah. It's that could definitely be down the line because these big companies have so many departments, you never know. You know, I spend my whole writing career writing for no-name companies. They're no names. They're just not household names. And then I've got an opportunity to write for a division of Kaiser Permanente, completely outside my field. But I told them. I told her. I said, listen, I don't focus in healthcare. I focus in enterprise. So I was like, oh, Ed, I get it, but I've read your stuff. That's exactly the style that I'm going after. I think you'd be great. So she's trying to convince me. I said, absolutely, yeah, let's do it. Let's try it. And we did a few white papers together. And, you know, but again, you know, it sounds impressive, but it was like the small basement division of Kaiser, you know, that did wellness programs. But it doesn't matter. I don't need to tell my prospects and clients, oh, yeah, I don't need to downplay it. It was still... So in your case, there could still be a division of Boeing.
Right.
Anyway, keep me posted. Let me know as you dig deeper into it. I'm happy to help you refine it.
Okay, yeah. That's just the whole – I don't think anybody – it's not a niche area that people talked about that much, but maybe a little bit. And I didn't really think how that would apply to me, but I can see how it definitely would.
Super.
So, thank you.
You are welcome. Exciting. Good stuff. By the way, Laura had also added, she said, this could make you somewhat of an insider. They're talking about what you've taught in business to aviation companies. Also, to encourage others looking at larger companies, my husband and daughter work for a Fortune 100 aerospace company, and the agency they use isn't good at all. They're very unhappy with it. They want to go in-house but are not staffed up for that right now. So there are opportunities out there at times. Laura, by the way, I mean, I don't want to put you on the spot, but if you wanted to connect with Nanette and connect her with some folks there, you know, she might be able to fill one of those gaps. So stranger things have happened in these groups, by the way. If you think that there might be a connection there, I'm not surprised at all that that company is unhappy with their marketing agency. It happens all the time. And one of the areas where clients get very disappointed is in with the writing. Marketing firms, ad agencies, one of the things that they always seem to overlook is the writing. It's like that necessary evil. They hate to do it. They know that a lot of what they produce includes writing, but they hate it. So it's, you know, they that's why they rarely have staff writers. They hire from outside, and they don't want to do it. I've had several clients who came to me and said, listen, we have our agency is doing this and that for us and some other things. We want to take that away. We want to give it to you. And I was shocked. Like, why? Well, the turnover is incredible there in terms of the writing, and the quality is very inconsistent. We would rather work with you and have that consistency. We love what you've been doing with these brochures. And then have them do what they do best. And frankly, what they do best is pitch these article ideas and help us with, you know, this and that. So we want to help them focus on that, and we're going to take away all this writing, case studies and brochures, articles, and all this stuff suddenly fell on my lap. So happens a lot, which is one more reason, again, guys, why, if somebody says we're already working with somebody or we have somebody internally or we work with an agency, great. Hey, would you mind keeping my information handy? If something were to happen, I'd love to get an opportunity to be your backup. And believe me, it does happen. All right, guys, again, star two, if you have a question, want to talk through anything, let me see if a couple of you had submitted some questions here. And the question is area of the call page. Oh, this is Deb responding. Okay, cool. Yeah, check out that video, Deb, on warm mule prospecting made easy or easier. You'd be surprised. If 10% of the copy is personalized, it will stand out. You don't need to make it, 50%. In fact, you don't have enough room to make it 50% personalized. All right, here's what I want to do as we wrap up. I don't see any other raised hands. I want actually a couple of things. I'm starting to include, and you should see it on your page. I'm not seeing the same page you're seeing, but I'm starting to include a PDF with each of these call pages that you can. It's a one-pager, and it has a great area for taking notes, and then some areas to the right for takeaways, top action items, and potential obstacles. I want to encourage everyone to download that page every time, print it out, and use it to take your notes on each of these calls. I find it's a great way to keep your notes in one location and then force you to think about, okay, what are my takeaways from what we talked about today, whether it was a conversation on my stuff or something I heard Ed talk about with somebody else, and then also walk away with some action items, some specific action items. The biggest thing you can do here is to develop and maintain momentum. And it's too easy to kind of sit back, take notes, and say, yeah, that makes sense. That's great. I like that. What a great idea. And before you know it, you haven't taken action on some of that stuff. I want you to take everything and make it as actionable as possible. That is so key. This one thing I think it separates this program from so many others like it. This is not a sit back and take notes kind of thing. This is a let's implement as we go program. So critical. The people who are successful with this method I'm teaching you, the coaching clients that I work with who are successful are the ones who are implementing as they go. And it's not perfect, but they're going with what they've got. They're still nervous. They're still scared. It still requires them to step outside their comfort zone, but they do it. And they might stumble. They might get several no's. They might, I don't even like to use the word fail. They might have some setbacks, but they get successes and they get wins. And that doesn't happen if you don't take action. So here's what I like to do in the chat area. A chat box, I want you to let me know what your biggest takeaway was from today's conversation. Biggest takeaway, just type it in, hit send message. Love to hear what you thought. And then also, while you're at it, tell me what your top action item is from today's call. What one thing are you going to be working on over the next week or two? What's the top action item for you? Type it into the chat box, let me know. Laura said, yeah, the writing is exactly what they're disappointed with their marketing agency. And Nanette says, thank you, Ed and Laura, for the encouragement and direction. Not sure why I didn't think of it. Hey, you're quite welcome. Here's the thing you need to understand. You're too close to your own stuff. I'm too close to my own stuff. And this is why it's important to talk this through and let us help you with some of these decisions, because you might be able to see some things maybe you hadn't considered. Nanette said her takeaway is rethink ghostwrite executive option. Super. All right. Don't be shy, guys. Tell me in the chat area, biggest takeaway, biggest action item for you, top action item. So, Laura, I'll put you on the spot. You said, appreciate the session. So much learned. What's your biggest takeaway from today? I'm curious. Andrew says, giving clients three fee options when discussing fees. Biggest takeaway. Oh, good. Susan P., love your idea of quoting two or three options for pricing on the work. The psychology of the decision-making process is really interesting. Yeah, it really is. It's It's just fascinating stuff. You see the studies that have been done on this. And what I've read, too, is that after three options, people start getting really confused, and then you start getting into inaction because now it's analysis paralysis sets in. But three is kind of an optimal number there. Colleen says, do you use that fee estimate form or quotes? I still use the fee estimate form, and I just do it there. You know, when I describe the scope of work, I just will present three options, where applicable. Honestly, it's not something I did until a few years ago, 2-3 years ago. And I don't really get into that in this class because, again, guys, there's a lot of things I could teach you. But this is not about doing everything. This is about let's focus on the most important things. I don't want to overwhelm you guys. If you want to try it, I think it's great. But don't let that get in your way. Right now, presenting one option is just totally fine. Don't feel like you have to. That's more of an advanced approach. Laura says, for her, is biggest takeaway, thinking outside the box, being flexible, and focusing. Super. Anybody else? Top takeaway, top action item, either or both. Love to know. Linda. Hey, Linda, good to see you. Got Linda, Ray. Hey, Ray, welcome. I know you've been slammed recently. Great to see your name here. Susan had said earlier for her another win. She went through all the program lessons and I'm feeling confident. The holdup is primarily timing because of the previously mentioned life issues. Yeah, okay. All right, guys. I don't see anybody else or any other answers. Again, the key thing is make sure to keep moving through this process. You know, it's not about how much you do. One fell swoop, it's about continuing to take steady action. If all you do are three simple things every week, that's great. You know, I want you to push yourself, but don't put so much in your schedule. Don't overload yourself to the point where you get discouraged because you're not getting it done. So keep moving forward. You're doing great. Let's continue the conversation in the Facebook forum. I'm there. Going to be there next week. I'm going to be out of town, but I'm going to check in daily. If there are any website reviews, it might take me a little bit longer to get back to you. And by the way, there's a website review thread in the forum, something I want to remind you guys. And I'm doing those in the forum itself. So if you want me to take a look at your copy, once you've gone through session two, once you feel it's ready for review, just post it in the website review thread. Give me a few days. And I'll get back to you with a video review. Happy to do that. You guys have a great rest of the week, and we'll talk again real soon. Take care.